Blog Talk Radio.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars' dirty hand. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
And welcome to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. This is your host for the first half hour, Alan Phillips, attorney at law. And we have a two-hour segment here. Ordinarily, we have co-host Debbie Brook with Homeopathy World Community sharing the middle hour and hosting alone the last half hour of the two-hour segment. Today, Debbie is vacationing in a way, and we are going to be welcoming special guest Rich Roberts, manager of the Pandemic Response Project, a little later in the show after the first half hour. So we'll look forward for Rich standing in for Debbie Brook today. This is a combined show, a simulcast with Homeopathy World Community and Freedomizer Radio, and we are very pleased to have listeners from both of those communities join together with us today to learn more about vaccines and your rights in the U.S. There is a guest call-in number for the live show. It is 1 p.m. Or a little after 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 Central, 11 Mountain, 10 Pacific Time. We welcome good morning to folks in Mountain Pacific Time, good afternoon to those of you in Central and Eastern Time, and greetings to anyone else from anywhere else in the world who may be listening. During the live show on Thursday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, we welcome your live calls. And in the first half hour in particular, any of your questions or comments concerning vaccine rights that could include but not necessarily be limited to comments and questions concerning your right to vaccine exemptions and waivers or vaccine legislative issues. But you're welcome to call anywhere during the two-hour segment with vaccine-related questions, and in particular if they're homeopathy-related questions in the last half hour, although today we will extend the vaccine rights issue through the full two hours as Homeopathy World Community co-host Debbie Brook, who ordinarily takes that last half hour to talk about homeopathy, is not with us today. But she'll be back next week, and we'll certainly be glad to have her back with us. Wanted to mention right up front to folks that the Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights has a petition for people to sign to show their support for the passage of a philosophical exemption to immunizations in Mississippi. Mississippi right now is one of only two states that has only a medical exemption. Most states in the U.S. offer both medical and religious exemptions. And let me clarify, we're talking about exemptions for school, for children in school, or college students. Now, these are not exemptions for other arenas, such as for healthcare workers in the workplace or people in the military or immigrants and so forth. There are many different contexts in the U.S. in which vaccines are mandated, and correspondingly, one or more exemption options available in each of those contexts. So we need to be sure not to confuse the arena. A lot of time people feel that or mistakenly think the exemptions that apply to students have application in other contexts, and usually they don't. So we need to be careful about that distinction. But we are nonetheless moving forward this. So the petition, I'm not going to try to read the URL online because it's a little bit on the long side, but you can get to that URL by going to the Pandemic Response Project website. Now, it's those three words spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com, pandemicresponseproject.com, and go to the news page. There's a link in the upper right-hand corner. At the top of the news page is a link to the petition, and we strongly encourage everyone in Mississippi or if you know anyone in Mississippi, go to that website, follow the link to the petition, because this is an issue where having numbers of people sharing their support actively is really going to make the difference. And so we really hope that we can get hundreds and preferably thousands of people in Mississippi to show their support for having a right to a philosophical exemption. As kind of a side issue, Mississippi is the only state in the union that arguably, in terms of formal legal analysis, can't have a religious exemption, even if a legislature wanted to pass that, although I think at this point they probably don't. Because in Mississippi and nowhere else in the U.S., the Mississippi State Supreme Court, about 30 years ago, entered a ruling on a case where they found that a vaccine religious exemption violates the federal constitution. And so in Mississippi, but nowhere else in the United States, in Mississippi, vaccine religious exemptions are unconstitutional, violate the federal constitution. You might think, from a common sense point of view, I certainly would, outside of or separate and apart from my understanding of the legal analysis, that because we have one constitution in the United States, we'd have the same rights under that constitution anywhere in the United States. One federal constitution for the whole country. But that's not the way the system works. Depending on how courts in different parts of the country may interpret the constitution, well, that's the law for those jurisdictions. And so when the Mississippi State Supreme Court entered a ruling saying that vaccine religious exemptions are unconstitutional, that becomes then the legal truth, if you will, for that jurisdiction, for the state of Mississippi. But go to pandemicresponseproject.com and to the news page, pandemicresponseproject.com, anyone in Mississippi. And if you know anyone in Mississippi, urge them to go to this petition and sign that petition. Moving on. The National Vaccine Information Center, a nonprofit organization that's been advocating for vaccine-injured children in particular and other people and for vaccine freedom of choice for decades at this point, has a separate website that they call the NVIC Advocacy Portal. And I can't urge people strongly enough to go to the advocacy portal. So I will tell you the URL, the web address for the NVIC Advocacy Portal. It is the letters NV as in Victor, IC, advocacy, NVICAdvocacy.org, O-R-G, NVICAdvocacy.org. Now, this is the NVIC's Advocacy Portal. The Advocacy Portal is a website that tracks vaccine legislation around the country. And the NVIC has an email list, and folks can probably get on that email list by going to the NVIC's main website, which I believe is just nvic.org, and get on their email list. And they recently, I don't know if it was the advocacy or the main organization there, but in any case, I recently found in my email inbox an email listing current pending legislation having to do with vaccines in states around the country, and I was just flabbergasted, and that's saying something coming from somebody who at least tries to have some general ongoing awareness about what's going on legislatively in the country. But there are dozens of bills in states around the country that are pending at this time that the NVIC Advocacy Portal urges us to either support, oppose, or watch to see how it plays out over time. And I'm not going to try to read the whole list because there's just dozens, but I wanted to highlight a few to give you an idea of what's going on around the country right now legislatively on the vaccine issue. This is quite a fascinating and sometimes, frankly, disturbing trend. For example, just in the last couple of years, we've had at least five states that have changed laws making it harder for parents to exercise an exemption for their kids in school, for example. And at least three of those instances, in my opinion, the revised laws raise serious constitutional issues. I think the laws, if challenged formally in court, would be held to be at least in part unconstitutional. The legislatures are going to great efforts and great extents to try to limit our access to exemptions. And this is predictably happening in states that are showing some of the higher exemption rates or trends in growing growth of exemption rates over recent years. And so predictably those with a pro-vaccine position, a support for mandatory immunizations out of a fear that allowing free choice will result in infectious diseases coming back in large quantities and or however you would say that. But in any case, for example, Arizona has a bill that would require school districts and private schools to post exemption rates to vaccination. Now, this seems a little more than just a bold attempt to try to embarrass those schools that have higher than average exemption rates to try to cause local communities to bring pressure on these schools and the parents to vaccinate their kids. You know, there's really two very effective ways to control people individually or collectively, and that is through money and through fear. And if the majority of a community, of people in a community, subscribe to mainstream vaccine views and learn that a local school has a high exemption rate, that, of course, is going to stir fear in the hearts of everyone who is afraid of the return of higher infectious disease rates. That is a fear that I have found in my own research over the years to not be grounded in scientific or medical fact. I certainly was raised with the beliefs and taught in school and elsewhere that if it weren't for vaccines, we'd have rampant infectious disease everywhere. And that's just not the truth, not the case. A formal, official statistics show that somewhere in the order of 90 to 95% of childhood infectious disease declines across the 1900s preceded the vaccine. So the vaccines cannot take credit for having rid us of childhood infectious diseases because they didn't accomplish that goal. That goal was substantially achieved prior to the introduction of the vaccines. So we needn't fear the return of widespread infectious disease if people start vaccinating. And in fact, a neurosurgeon, Dr. Russell Blaylock, who has been very outspoken over the years about problems with vaccines, has pointed it out that this idea of the herd immunity theory, that if we, you know, as long as we vaccinate most people, then everyone's protected. And that's why everyone says, well, your vaccine protects other people, so you need to get a vaccine. Points out that the majority of adults in the United States today are among what we sometimes refer to as baby boomers. But in any event, majority of adults are people who haven't been vaccinated in 10, 20, 30 years or more in some cases. And vaccine effectiveness, prevailing current wisdom, if we can call it that, tells us that vaccine safety and effectiveness, depending on the vaccine, lasts anywhere from a couple of years to maybe 10 years at most. Well, if the absence of vaccine protection meant that infectious disease were going to come back, they would have come back many, many years ago, and they'd be all over the place in major outbreaks in adults who no longer have any kind of vaccine protection, sometimes from years or even decades ago that it would have worn off. So it really doesn't make sense. But that's the fear tactic. Let's put pressure on folks. Let's see. Here's one from Connecticut, a bill that would remove the requirement that students at community and technical college provide proof of immunizations. Of course, the advocacy portal folks support that. That would be terrific, a little more freedom there for people to go to school and not have to deal with that sort of a requirement. There's another bill in Connecticut that would prohibit employers from mandating flu vaccines for employees. Boy, what a nice relief that would be. So some good things and bad things going on in the list of legislative activism. And by the way, if you go to the advocacy portal website, that's nvicadvocacy.org, there's a list, I think, on their homepage. I think you have to sign up first, but it doesn't cost anything to sign up. And you can not only track the pending legislation in your own state, you can get a quick overview of what's going on around the country. And that's quite revealing because we see some trends. We see many states trying to do same or similar things, and other states a little more experimental in the sense that they're trying to do things that few or no other states are trying to do. But several states right now, in particular, I'm looking at a listing with Georgia, has a pending bill that would allow pharmacists to administer vaccines to children. And I was skimming through this list of dozens of pending bills, and I believe there were a few, at least, different states that have pending bills about allowing pharmacists to administer vaccines to children. And I had occasion recently to talk to Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, a medical doctor and attorney who has had a family medical practice for 30 or 40 years without vaccinating, and what he thought about having pharmacists to administer vaccines. And he has no, first of all, disrespect for pharmacists or pharmacists' intelligence, but their training is not in medical care. And, you know, is there a reason, you know, should you be looking at somebody's medical file, for example, or be familiar with that person's medical history before you administer vaccines? There, you know, might be a reason, and the parent or person might not even be aware of that. You know, that's a good reason to get your vaccines, if you're going to get them at all, from a medical doctor who hopefully someone you've already been seeing or your child has already been seeing, who knows your child, knows the history, and knows is it an appropriate thing to do at this time. And are the pharmacists trained to deal with the rare but occasional instant severe adverse reaction? If somebody goes into anaphylactic shock, are pharmacists trained to deal with that? Because that sometimes does happen with vaccines. I've seen several bills pending showing up on this list that talk about giving pharmacists more latitude to administer vaccines either to adults or to children. So that's a trend we need to watch, folks. That's that one concerns me. Let's see. Here's another. I'm sort of picking some at random to give you an idea, and then I'll go on to some other points here. Here's one in Idaho. Expands the immunization tracking system to include adults. Now, there's a whole separate issue about immunization tracking systems that states around the country in recent years have been implementing. The basic concept is that every child, and perhaps here in Idaho, if the person who introduced this bill gets their way, even all adults, will be listed in this tracking registry so that state health department people can quickly identify people who are not vaccinated and probably to take steps to encourage them. Would that be in the form of letters or phone calls or door-to-door visits? Who knows? When I say door-to-door visits, I'm not speaking facetiously. There's actually language in Obamacare that provides federal grants to states to promote vaccines and includes going door-to-door. So there is potentially federal funding for states to send people door-to-door to try to get you to vaccinate or you to vaccinate yourself or your kids. So those of us who value the right to make those decisions for ourselves will probably find that a little disconcerting. So let me see, just a couple more here. There were at least two or three, if not more, pending bills in different states. Here's one in Kentucky that would require HPV vaccine. Now, the bill in Kentucky would require the HPV vaccine for girls age 9 to 16, and, are you listening, hold on to your hats here, and for boys age 10 to 16, because we don't want boys to get cervical cancer either. They're real important. This is, again, another really, I don't even want to say disconcerting, I want to say tragic, because of all the vaccines out there, I think the evidence is clearest and most dramatic for the harm caused by the HPV vaccine. Hundreds of young women have died from an adverse reaction to the HPV vaccine, and countless others have had serious permanent disabilities. We've had young ladies who were in the peak of health, in some cases school athletes, and just reduced to a pile of flesh and bones with severe disabilities from this vaccine, and is very, very questionable as to whether there's even any benefit. In fact, the only way you could really know truly if there was a benefit in terms of does it prevent cancer would be to have a large test group that you vaccinated and you follow them over a period of 20, 30, 40 years to the time later in life when the risk of cervical cancer is significant or more significant, and you see if there's a lower incidence at that point in time. So we really don't have, in the best case, we don't have the evidence. And yet, not only are we injecting young girls, and we have states trying to introduce and pass laws requiring it, but also of boys. And it's just silly would be the polite way to say it. Let's see, what else have we got here? Here's a real interesting one in Missouri. A bill that would require parents to be informed of the ingredients in the vaccine before the vaccine is administered. And, of course, NVIC Advocacy Reports list that as one to support. What a concept. You can't get a vaccine until somebody tells you what's actually in the vaccine. I love the concept, though. I have to admit it makes me wonder, well, okay, so you find out what's in the vaccine, and let's say... You know, some people, the doctor is going to say, yeah, but they're safe, that's okay, that the ingredients sound bad, but they're in very minute quantities, no problem. You know, some parents will shrug it off. The doctor says it's okay. Other parents will hear that list and perhaps be concerned. But then the question becomes, what can they do with that concern? I don't know off the top of my head what exemptions Missouri has, other than I know they have medical and religious. I don't recall off the top of my head if they also have philosophical there or not. But if they don't have a philosophical exemption, having that information will put at least some parents in a bit of a quandary, because they may have second thoughts about getting the vaccine or giving their children, allowing their children to be administered the vaccines, but may not have a clear understanding of whether or not they have a legal right and may or may not have a legal right to refuse once they have that information. So I hope if Missouri doesn't have a philosophical exemption that folks there will work to get one, because while the first and critical prerequisite is to have good information, if you don't have the legal right to act on that information, you really have one piece of a two-part puzzle put together there. Here's another bill in Montana that would allow pharmacists to administer vaccines to children 7 and older. I'm not sure about this pharmacists administering vaccines issue. Is this something that's a turf war between pharmacists and pediatricians about who gets to vaccinate, who gets paid to do that or not? I don't know. It's sort of an interesting thing there. Has some of the many different issues attached to it, though. Here's one in Nebraska, a bill that would require hospitals to mandate the Tdap vaccines for all employees. Now, we have hospitals all over the country increasingly mandating flu shots. Now, this is mostly hospital policy as opposed to a state law, but here is, and there are some laws and some bills out there, a bill being a proposed law that may or may not become law, depending on whether it's passed by a state or federal legislature and signed into law by the governor or the president, respectively. But hospitals to mandate Tdap vaccines. Folks, there's a real important point here. There is always going to be Another vaccine. I had a figure from 2010. I know I say this on the air over and over again, but it really bears repeating. In 2010, there were over 330 vaccines, either already on the market or in development. There's a vaccine for anything and everything you could think of, and about 100 other things you wouldn't ever think of. Either already out there or being developed. There's always going to be another vaccine. Right now, it's mostly flu vaccines. Here's a state that for healthcare workers. Here's a state that wants to add the Tdap vaccine to that. What's going to be next?
Who knows?
You know, there's over 300 options to get in line there. And when you've got a system set up where the federal government subsidizes the vaccine research and development, federal government has passed laws holding the vaccine manufacturers immune from lawsuit, immune from liability for the effects of their products, the adverse effects, the injury and death that vaccines cause. The federal and state governments mandate vaccines. And when someone is injured or killed, and if they are able to navigate their way through the vaccine court system and get some compensation, that compensation comes from the government. This is quite a racket. So why wouldn't the pharmaceutical industry be pushing for laws limiting our access to exemptions and requiring as many people as they can to get as many vaccines as possible if their goal is to maximize profits at all costs? It certainly looks like that is the goal
much of the time
we look at the way things are playing out. We're going to have to go to break in about 4 minutes. So I tell you what, I'm going to just go down here and talk about two or three more bills here just to give you an idea. But do go to the advocacy portal, nvicadvocacy.com, and look through the list more carefully yourself to your heart's content. But go to your state or surrounding states and see what's going on in your neck of the woods with vaccine legislation. There are some hopeful things, bills being introduced to help expand the right to informed choice, but there seem to be many, many more out there that are out there to increase vaccination coverage and rates with more and more vaccines to more and more people, and to allow new professionals, and then particular pharmacists, to administer vaccines, making it easier and easier to get vaccines, and harder and harder to opt out. Here's a bill in Oklahoma that would require healthcare facilities to grant religious exemptions to flu vaccine mandates. Terrific law. The NVIC position says support if amended. So there must be some problems in the language there, but the basic idea is terrific. Now, I'll just mention as sort of a side point, even if a state passes a law mandating flu vaccines for healthcare workers, they have a right under federal law to opt out on religious grounds. But the law under the federal law is federal civil rights law. It's not a vaccine exemption per se. It's a right to, I'll put it like this, it's a requirement for employers to accommodate their employees' religious beliefs and practices. So if there was a state law more specific saying directly, you have a right to a religious exemption, here's the procedure, here's what qualifies or what have you, spells it out in more direct terms, that would be a good thing. But even if there's a state law or company policy requiring you as a healthcare worker or any other kind of employee for that matter, if your employer is mandating flu shots or Tdap shots or Hep A shots, I've heard from food service industry people being required to get the hepatitis A vaccine. Federal civil rights law does provide an out. It's a tricky area to navigate on your own. There are some legal pitfalls to avoid, so it might be a good idea to consult a knowledgeable attorney. And I've got information about that on my vaccinerights.com website. But the ideal here, again, would be to have a law that spells that out for us, state law. Let's see, one or two more quick examples here. We have about a minute left here before we got to go to break, but we've got an hour and a half more of the show, folks, and so we do hope you'll stick around with us for more of the show. Here's one in Texas. I can't believe this. Consent to immunization by a child. Boy, I'm not going to be able to respond to this in a minute, so maybe I'll bring it up later in the show, but It is unconstitutional, blatantly unconstitutional, for the state, any state, to give a minor, any child under the age of 18, any authority to consent to his own medical treatment, even when there's in some sort of emergency. We have other adults who can step in who already have authority under state laws to do that, but children cannot make those decisions. By definition, they are they're minors for a reason, because they don't have the mental, emotional maturity to make those kind of decisions, especially when you've got with vaccines that do carry, and I don't care what anybody says, we can debate the details, but the medical and legal reality is that vaccines cause injury and death. The National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program pays out on average roughly $100 million a year, and has done that for the last roughly 25 years or so, to vaccine victims and their families. No child should be in control of that decision for themselves, even if it were constitutional. But folks, I can assure you that, in my best understanding, it is just simply not constitutional. Well, we're going to go to break now. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. I hope you'll stick with us. We look forward to having you back, and we are expecting a guest co-host today, Rich Roberts, so we'll be looking for Rich to call in somewhere in the next few minutes here, see if we can get him on the air to join us. Stay with us.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life, Shades, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain and embellish a Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they had cloned the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
Shade the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here: there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to FreedomizerRadio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on FreedomizerRadio.com. Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer, for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/Freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/Freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/Freedomizer.
Hey, campers, this is your Uncle Scott here. I want you to join me this Friday night on FreedomizerRadio.com at 9 p.m. Pacific Time as I welcome Liam Sheff, the conspiracy realist and investigative comedian. He is a journalist, author, artist, radio host, stand-up lecturer on many contemporary myths of science, politics, and culture. He has broken national stories of pharmaceutical madness, been published widely in print and on the web, and has worked on and featured in films that have not yet been banned. To his credit, he's also been libeled on the front page of the New York Times. He is also a frequent co-host on the Robert Scott Bell Show. He's very entertaining and informative, and I think you'll find it very interesting. So tune in Friday night as we discuss a various number of topics with Liam Sheff.
Well, welcome back. We are back after break now. This is your weekly co-host for the Thursday Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Still waiting for our guest co-host, Rich Roberts, to join us on the line here, but I see we have a caller on the line here. Caller from area code 661, you're on the air. Area code 661, are you with us? Okay, somebody who had... Whoops.
I'm sorry.
Are you with us there?
Put me on later.
Okay.
I lost my code to get in, so I can't see anything.
All right. Well, that's Debbie Brooke. We'll bring her back a little later in the show then. Debbie, if you have a way to let me know about that, please do, or I'll just check with you in a few minutes. I want to go on and talk about some things in the news recently on the vaccine issue. Here's a recent article from Mercola.com. Vaccine news. AAP, that's the American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP opposes ban on thimerosal while study finds more vaccines equate to increased hospitalization and death. Fascinating article here that, according to public health doctors and the Medical Trade Association, poor children in developing countries should continue to get vaccines containing the preservative, mercury preservative, thimerosal, because providing these children with mercury-free vaccines would devastate, this is a quote here, would devastate public health efforts in developing countries, the New York Times reports. Boy, this is such a disturbing thing to hear coming from our... supposedly trusted health officials, because let me just give you one example. I know this is another point that I repeat from time to time, but it's another one of those ones that's just so important that it really bears repeating. The Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs, nonprofit organization, they go by the shorter nickname CoMed, C-O-M-E-D, CoMed. They used the Federal Freedom of Information Act, federal law that allowed them to get access to, in this particular instance, emails from the CDC. And the emails showed that CDC officials communicating with study authors were talking about data they had when they studied vaccines in Danish children, a group of Danish kids. They found that when they took the mercury out of vaccines, the autism rates went down, and went down over a period of years. And they were debating in these emails whether or not to publish this information. And the bottom line is they ultimately decided not to publish the information. And the study they published, sometimes referred to informally as the Danish study, is the study that everyone points to now when they say, here's the proof that vaccines don't cause autism, so quit talking about that darn vaccine autism issue. That's all just a bunch of hype. Here's the study that proves that there is no connection and the vaccines are safe, at least as far as autism is concerned. Of course, nobody has offered any plausible alternatives explanation for the mushrooming autism rates all over the country that have been going up in direct correlation to the increase in vaccinations being required of our children. But I digress. The point here is that we have a documented instance of deliberate fraud I'm not a criminal attorney, but the phrase criminal fraud jumps in my mind when I hear about somebody knowingly withholding information about harm, not even just withholding it, but withholding it so they can publish a study that claims exactly the opposite. So this is the world we live in today. There is, sadly, and sometimes in some key times and places, lack of integrity, and it raises some really serious issues. But I see we have our guest co-host on the line today, Mr. Rich Roberts. Rich has been a wonderful, wonderful person supporting me for the last two or three years now with the Pandemic Response Project. Rich, are you with us?
Yes. Good afternoon, Alan. Thanks for having me on. I'm sorry I was having some technical difficulty getting on earlier, so
not
hear
a problem.
You, but you couldn't hear me, so.
Okay. Well, you didn't show up on my switchboard here at first, so that's
odd.
Yeah, I went through a good half hour of technical wrangling myself this morning, trying to figure out how to do the simulcast and get everything set up and lined up. And I'm I believe I got it set up correctly. I guess I'll hear from someone later whether or not we actually went out to both Freedomizer Radio and Homeopathy World Community, but that certainly was the intent. And again, we're glad to have listeners from both of those audiences in a combined show. And Rich, it's great having you here with us today. Rich, I know I had asked you yesterday, as we do when you are a co-host, guest co-host from time to time of the show, I always deeply appreciate you taking time out to fill in and help us out, because you do have great insights, and you always get very interesting articles and things. Do you have any article in particular that got your attention that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I do, Alan. I do. Let's start off here. This is an article that I picked up from our website, but it's originally from VacTruth, and this is authored by Christina England. And this is some catchy title here. It is Bill Gates continues, quote, God's work, unquote. Third world vaccine workers shot dead. So that definitely grabbed my attention. And this is kind of a tragic and a very concerning development, Alan, and I know you're aware of this, but this article is actually quoting from The Guardian. On February 8th, we had yet another incident, this time in Nigeria, where gunmen killed 9 healthcare workers who were administering the polio vaccination. And these gunmen were thought to belong to a radical Islamic sect. And this is on top of what had happened earlier in Pakistan, where several vaccine workers were also shot dead in January. So it's very touchy. This has the potential to also kind of give our cause a black eye, but, you know, it shows in no uncertain terms that the people in the third world are starting to make their feelings known about these vaccines. And
this is so interesting, and I guess we could only speculate, Rich. So let's not go too far with that, but let's go a little bit with that. What are the implications here, and what might people be tempted to read into this? Because if you put aside the whole vaccine controversy for just a moment here, just think of this these acts just in terms of mainstream beliefs of vaccination, it sort of makes sense to me that a radical element would see shooting people who are going around giving vaccines as a way of terrorizing them, saying, we're not going to allow you to get this protection. We're going to leave you vulnerable to the disease. So not only are they afraid about getting shot if they participate in some clear and obvious way in a vaccination campaign, but now they're terrified that they're going to be more vulnerable to disease because they're being prevented from getting the vaccines. But now you can add hypothetically a whole other layer to it if you bring in the vaccine controversy. Are these people doing this because they are anti-vaccine, or are they doing it because they want to instill terror under mainstream views? And it's terror either way, and I wouldn't condone the behavior in any event whatsoever. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts, however ultimately speculative it may be, or are you seeing any reference to these ideas in the articles?
Well, of course, the worrisome speculation for us is that this can link anti-vaccine issues with terrorism, which is, of course, probably the knee-jerk kind of spin that the mainstream media will put on it. But, you know, this article does bring up some really good points, and I think the underlying reason why they're doing this, Alan, is because they don't have any faith in the vaccines, and they realize that there is a harmful effect. And this article points out that in Nigeria, where this most recent shooting happened, some clerics have claimed that the vaccines are part of a Western plot to sterilize young girls and eliminate the Muslim population. And that might sound radical to people, but, you know, these people are right to be suspicious. And as a matter of fact, this article points out that in 1995, something just like this came up. Many third world countries were being given a tetanus vaccine at the time, and it turned out that it contained a birth control drug. And this was being done by the World Health Organization, or WHO, but another organization known as the COMITE actually obtained several vials of this tetanus vaccine for testing and found that it contained it's a naturally occurring hormone. It's called HCG. Maybe you can check my pronunciation on this, Alan, but it's human chorionic gonadotropin, which what that is a hormone that's actually essential for pregnancy, but when you combine that hormone with, like, the tetanus shot and its toxoid carrier, you are essentially causing the body to create antibodies against HCG. So that was really kind of vaccinating the woman against pregnancy and forcing her body to abort. And so all that had come out. And curiously, at that time in 1995, Alan, when they were given that tetanus vaccine, they weren't giving that to men or boys or babies, just women ages 15 to 45. So that's women of childbearing age. So it seems like a lot more than a coincidence there.
Well, this is a more complicated issue than first met the eye, and I tell you, just reading the headlines on the articles about the shootings, it's instantly complicated right there. But your point is, I just really want to underscore this in quick summary form here, that the idea that vaccines might be some kind of a population control plot is not a conspiracy theory in the sense of speculating or inventing an idea to try to cause worry, fear, hysteria. It's something that has documentation behind it. It's documented instances in the Philippines, and I think it was either Central and or South America. I don't have the information in front of me at the moment, but there have been at least three different instances that I've heard of where indigenous populations have been experimented on with vaccines for the deliberate intent of testing the ability to control fertility through vaccines. And I saw an article recently, Ritz, where they were talking about doing this with a deer population, a wild deer population north of New York City, if I remember correctly. It was somewhere in New York, where there was an article talking about they were thinking about using vaccines because, for whatever reason, in that particular area, the deer population had just exploded. They were talking about using vaccines to control animal population. So there's no mystery or doubt about the idea about whether or not vaccines can be used in that way, or whether they have been used at least experimentally in that way. Yet, you can bet your bottom dollar that when a radical Muslim group or any group who is saying we're not going to be part of an experiment, whether or not it is actually going on in that particular instance is, of course, a separate question, but the concern or fear of it is valid. And yet these people perhaps are, but in any event, will be portrayed as radical extremists. And what I see here, Rich, is at least the possibility for folks with a pro-vaccine agenda to orchestrate this all from the beginning. In putting out all the pieces there and then disclaiming the part of the pieces so that they can then use this to, getting back to the point you made a few minutes ago, to bottom line associate anti-vaccine, the anti-vaccine position with terrorism and make anyone who takes that position look cause people to have sort of an instant fear reaction because of the association with terrorism, and it's very disturbing. I suppose on one level, if indeed that is what's going on, but even if it wasn't orchestrated that way, you can bet that it'll be used that way at one point or another, to one degree or another. Interesting, almost ingenious if that is what's going on, in, of course, a diabolical way, so very disturbing. Well, if you have anything else to add on that, by all means, please do, and then I would just ask you, what else have you been looking at that you'd like to call our attention to today?
Well, just to kind of sum up that article, Alan, in response to this violence, and, you know, what we're talking about in Nigeria and Pakistan is not the only incidences. There were also major events in Chad, northern Africa, where 106 children become ill after receiving the meningitis vaccine, okay, and 40 of those were paralyzed, and we talked about that before on the radio show. And there's also, you know, as you know, skyrocketing polio rates in India, which are connected to vaccine campaigns. But basically, in response to this violence, Bill Gates went on the record saying that he believed that the global vaccination program was God's work and that this violence was not going to stop us from succeeding, he said. And so, you know, my question is, you know, if Bill Gates is really so concerned about the people in the third world, you know, why doesn't he care if they have proper food and clean water? And, you know, why is it always just pro-vaccine and pro-big industry? And why doesn't he use his money to help these people who are adversely affected from vaccinations instead of just, you know, always pushing the vaccines and never looking at the other side of this issue?
Well, historically, God has always worked through the rich and powerful and wealthy, you know, so there's a lot of precedent for Bill Gates' stance there. I suppose I should say something just in case somebody doesn't recognize that I'm being completely sarcastic when I say that, but it is sort of interesting, you know, some of the great religious leaders came from very modest means to really understand the plight of the many. It really helps to come from those places, those categories, those socioeconomic conditions. Of course, we would expect Bill Gates, of course, has been heavily invested in international vaccination. You know, you ran past some things, and I wanted to jump in several times, but I made myself be quiet so as not to be rude and disrupt you there. But, you know, in India, we're seeing, I just want to add a little bit to your reference to India. You know, India recently claimed to have finally eradicated polio. And yet there is this condition that is showing up all over India, a condition that is clinically indistinguishable from polio, but it's not polio. Clinically indistinguishable. It turns out to be more deadly than polio, but it's not polio. And it happens in people who were vaccinated against polio, but it's not polio. Well, again, a little mantra there, if it's not polio, what really I mean by that is it's not the wild polio virus that's doing this, and so they can get away, or, you know, get away to the extent that anybody will buy it anyway, with saying that it's not polio. But what we've actually done in India, and we had a very similar thing here in the U.S. a few decades ago, we've traded what was called polio for something that's even worse, that's a consequence of the vaccine. And yet, because it's not the literal, identical, same wild polio virus, they say, well, it's not polio. So we have gotten rid of polio. Look how wonderful vaccines are. In the U.S., back in the 1950s, there had been about a five-year natural decline of polio before the first vaccine was introduced, and the definition of polio was changed when the vaccine was introduced so that on paper, the statistics show that polio went down, but polio as it was defined prior to the vaccine actually went up for a couple of years. And so there was a very deliberate and calculated cover-up. And that cover-up resulted in health authorities saying, and the vast majority of the public believing, because we desperately wanted to see polio disappear and believe that science had saved us, when in fact it backfired. It was a failure, and it disrupted a five-year natural decline for at least a couple of years, and then the decline ultimately continued. And there were entire countries in Europe, for example, that didn't vaccinate against polio, and polio declined there too. So it was not the vaccine that caused the decline. In fact, quite the opposite. The vaccine caused a disruption to a preceding natural decline, and yet that was covered up to protect not only the vaccine and the vaccine makers, but the allopathic world in a broader sense, because vaccines today are seen as just a major cornerstone of larger vaccine policy. The polio vaccine is just one of the first things people point to. Oh, this is the proof that vaccines are wonderful. Not the case when you look at the facts. And when I say facts here, I'll give you one example. There's a there was in 1960 or 62, I forget now, I think it was 1962, a professor, Bernard Greenberg from the University of North Carolina, who was an expert in biostatistics, and he went on to become the dean of the School of Public Health at the University of North Carolina. 1962, Dr. Greenberg testified before Congress that polio increased for 2 years following the introduction of the vaccine, and that health authorities had deliberately covered that up. So this, again, just I have to underscore that the vast majority of things, if I don't qualify it otherwise, when I make assertions, they're 99% of the time it's going to be based on solid evidence. It's not a theory or a speculative thing. As much as I can, I try to be careful about the facts or information I assert as fact, and I try to qualify it, as I did earlier in this show, if it is speculation. Rich, I know you're got something there to chime in with. Please do.
Well, I think it's really important that you were speaking about polio, Alan, because that's, you know, as you know, that's one of the knee-jerk things we hear all the time from the pro-vaccine camp is, you know, in the support of vaccines as well, vaccination eliminated polio. So it was nice to hear that discussion, because that's really not held up by the facts. So, but I did have another interesting article here that I wanted to wade into. And this one is from InfoWars, and this is by Melissa Melton. And this is really outrageous, Alan. But a Merck study pushes antidepressant use with vaccines. So the deal is that a study that was published in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases is claiming that taking antidepressants will increase vaccine effectiveness. And they did a two-year study, and they compared immune responses in 40 elderly people, all with major depressive disorders, to 52 control subjects. And this was in regard to Merck's Zostavax, which is a shingles vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the Infectious Disease Society of America, based on their findings, they said that depressed patients not been treated with antidepressants, and we're talking about selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which have a really bad record for adverse events too. But anyway, these patients that weren't being treated with antidepressants had lower cell-mediated immunity to the varicella zoster virus, that's the shingles virus, and were less able to respond to the shingles vaccine compared with patients who were not depressed, who were depressed but were receiving treatment with antidepressants. And so they go on to make, you know, an even more dramatic statement and say that if antidepressants increase the efficiency of the shingles vaccine in those who are depressed, such treatment may have a similar effect on the immune response of depressed patients to other important vaccines. So it's not the that the vaccines aren't effective that we're supposed to be worried about, Alan. It's the fact that if we get depressed, you know, all we need to do is take this medication in order to make our vaccines work, or even if we're not depressed. So it's really an outrageous kind of study and assumption here. And it doesn't take into effect, you know, at all, like the kind of mental, spiritual aspect of depression on health. And so this is a really, really dangerous study, and it's just pushing kind of antidepressants on people as if this is a very important product, you know, byproduct of antidepressants is to increase vaccine efficiency.
Well, you know, Rich, my first reaction to all this is that it makes me feel really depressed. It is really tough to hear this one. It sounds to me like a prelude to recommending antidepressants for everybody, because even if you're not sure whether or not you really need it, go ahead and take it because it'll help your vaccine work better. It sounds like a way to take anybody, a large group of children or adults who maybe would be in a gray area where someone's going to say, well, you know, this doesn't really sound like you need any medication, but you know what? It'll help your vaccine work better. Let's go ahead and do it then. That's the reason to do it. It sounds like an opening for, first of all, coming up with a way to refute the claims about how the flu vaccine in particular, for example, is clearly ineffective. But now we don't have to throw away that recipe or all those vaccines. We could just package it with antidepressants. Maybe that'll help. Now, I know this was not talking about the flu vaccine, but I'm sort of, again, I am speculating here, of course. What are the implications here? Is this, you know, the direction that all this is going? Rich, give us any other comments you have on that one, and then we actually have to go to break again here, but go ahead and take, you know, whatever time you'd like to, and then folks, we'll take a break shortly and be back with you in a few minutes. We've got a whole other hour to go, so I hope you'll stay with us. But, Rich, any further comments on this particular piece?
Well, there is an important subset of information here related to this, Alan, and this is coming from the work of Dr. Mercola, who I like to plug him and support him as well. But he's pointed out that chickenpox and shingles, which was the virus you know, we were studying in this instance, they're both caused by related viruses. And he's written extensively on this about the connection between the widespread use of the chickenpox vaccine and followed up by a 90% increase in shingles cases in 5 years. And Mercola is pointing out that chickenpox is nature's way of really protecting people from shingles, because since this vaccine has been introduced, we have a lot of children who have, you know, a weakened immunity to just natural chickenpox strains, which are generally, you know, as you know, extremely mild, Alan. But since they've kind of lost their immunity to this, what we're finding is as adults that they don't have the kind of immunity to the real chickenpox virus, and so they're not immune to shingles, which is a much more severe disease, a much more complicated disease, and it's also, as this article points out, much more expensive. It results in 5 times more hospitalizations and 3 times as many deaths as chickenpox. And the shingles vaccine is pricey at $200 a jab. So, I mean, this is really, it's really kind of scary, but basically by introducing a chickenpox vaccine to a relatively harmless disease, you end up creating, you know, a shingles epidemic. And this is just the kind of stuff that we're up against here.
Yeah, and before the introduction of the chickenpox vaccine, which I believe is within the early 90s, 1990s, shingles was predominantly a disease that affected people over 50. After the introduction of the chickenpox vaccine, we saw shingles showing up in children vaccinated with the chickenpox vaccine. So serious concerns there. We're going to go to break here. Folks, we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. We do have co-host Debbie Breck on the line. Debbie, if you're there and listening, she was having, I think, some technical difficulty earlier. Debbie, we'll bring you on after the break, so I hope you're there and we'll be able to come on. But in any event, Rich and I will be with you right after the break, folks. Don't go away.
AntiWarTees.com is to promote anti-war activism, unlocking minds and shattering paradigms. By purchasing one of these t-shirts, you become an anti-war activist. www.antiwartees.com, bringing peace and human rights to the mainstream. Buy it, wear it, become it. Anti-War Tees.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait.
There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. Libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants, I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it. Silver Leaf Tea.
We know about the Gulf oil spill. We know about problems with voting. We know about environmental toxicity. We know that there are problems about the wars that our government is not representing the people as we would wish them to represent us. But we also know that there are crystal clear solutions. I'm Patricia Springstead, and I'm heavily involved in making the world a better place.
Every day you try to brainwash people just to have things go your way.
Trisha Springstead on Freedomizer Radio. Crystal clear solutions.
Well, tell me what you're gonna do when you're well and dry.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S.,
Thursdays.
Thursday afternoons, because it is afternoon for us here in North Carolina, Rich and myself, but from 1 to 3 p.m. Thursday afternoons, but that's, I think, 10 a.m. to noon on the West Coast and somewhere in between for those of you in the middle time zones. Rich, you're still there. I'm going to ask you to hold for just a moment here. I'm going to check and see if Debbie is on the line with us or not.
Okay.
Debbie, are you on the line with us?
You hear me?
Yes, we can. I was getting ready to be all disappointed and say you weren't with us. Debbie, wonderful to have you with us today.
Yes, I'm listening in. I'm playing on the chat, talking to all the folks out there.
Okay. Did you want to chime in on anything, or you want to just keep on listening?
I just wanted to let you know that I uploaded on the HWC Blog Talk Radio an audio file for today. I don't know whether you received my messages.
Have not gotten messages about that. Are you talking about the last segment of the show?
Correct.
Are you able to run that?
Well, we will see if you're able to. I think that you're going to have to. I think I could push the button on the Blog Talk Radio and you'd be able to hear it instead of me jabbing.
All right. Well, let's give that a try.
Be at 2:30.
Okay. So I will make sure that your mic is open.
I sound fine. Yeah.
And you just please keep me apprised of that. We'd be glad to
have
done it. That's
great. We'll have to just fake it, I guess.
Well, you know, we're all professionals in what we do, but that includes winging it and faking it. You know, you get really good at that on radio as well. But We never have a shortage of material. So we'll see if we can get that on, Debbie, because I'd hate for folks who are looking forward to your homeopathy segment at the end of the two-hour block to miss out on that. So let's see if we can't pull that in. But if we have any difficulty, we'll just keep you lassoed, maybe make you talk to us live about it. How about that?
Okay, well, we'll do that, and stay with me.
All right, folks. Stay tuned for that. Rich, where did we leave off? Do we have any more comments, or did you have any other articles you wanted to move into at this point?
Sure. I have another article here I would like to discuss. This one is from Natural News by Ethan Huff.
He's crying. Oh, sorry.
And this one is entitled 800 More Children Permanently Harmed by Vaccinations. And this one caught my attention, Alan, because I knew we were going to be talking about all the damage in Africa from some of these vaccination campaigns. But this one is in Europe. So the eugenics plan is, you know, not just for Africans. So in this case, we're talking about GlaxoSmithKline and their vaccine, Pandemrix. It's Pandemrix. Mm-hmm. That was widely administered throughout Europe during the 2009 and 10 influenza pandemic. And it was responsible for causing serious and permanent side effects in many children, and at least 800 children. Many of them are living in Sweden, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
But they now have narcolepsy because of this vaccine. And, you know, this is really getting the attention of some of government officials, which is good. But a study that was published in the Journal of Public Library of Science found that cases of narcolepsy, and that's an incurable sleeping disorder that can cause hallucinations, nightmares, even paralysis, but narcolepsy skyrocketed by about 1,700% in children and teenagers under the age of 17 following the widespread administration of Pandemrix. So that's an astronomical statistic. And scientists determined at the time that the mass vaccination campaigns were directly associated with the otherwise inexplicable spike in cases of narcolepsy. And we even have a man named Emmanuel Mignot, or it's Mignot perhaps. And this is he's a leading expert on narcolepsy. The interesting thing, Alan, is he actually has been funded by GlaxoSmithKline. So for him to say this is kind of a break for us. But he explained that there's no doubt in his mind that Pandemrix is directly responsible for causing this increase in narcolepsy among European children. And, you know, roughly 5 million Swedes were vaccinated for H1N1 during the 2009-2010 so-called pandemic. And yet, you know, statistically, they're saying that as few as 30 people, they might estimate to have been kind of saved from a swine flu death as a result of this shot. And meanwhile, we have more than 200 cases of narcolepsy. So it really kind of shows, you know, in this instance, that the harm outweighed the good or any potential good that might have been done by this vaccine. And I guess really the real insult about this, Alan, is this article points out that following the initial release of these reports, the European Medicines Agency, the EMA, they come out and they quickly blocked the vaccine, Pandemrix, from being further administered, but only to individuals under the age of 20. So, you know, if you're under the age of 20, they will admit that there's a real risk of narcolepsy. But if you're 21, I suppose it's just fine to take this vaccine. And this is just the kind of, you know, half-hearted response that, you know, we've grown accustomed to.
Well, Rich, there's this little known, and it's real surprising that it's so not known, but there's a biological shift that occurs in every human being the moment that they turn 21, that where this, you know how when a baby is born, there's these switches, so to speak, that flip, like your heart, the valves close in a certain way so that the baby's own heart is beating and not getting the blood flow from the mother, you know. Same thing happens when we turn 21, the same idea that this flu vaccine harm shield just sort of instantly kicks in. I mean, it's just so interesting to me that they can pick a place where you draw a line where you say, down from here you might get narcolepsy, but everybody's fine. The other thing I want to say, which, now, you know, we've talked about the narcolepsy issue for, you know, a good 3 years now, because it came up fairly soon during and after the pandemic. And I think it's fascinating, and I'm, you know, the harm is tragic. There's just no words that can grasp. But I'm really glad, Rich, that you took a couple moments to explain briefly what narcolepsy means and does, and you covered volumes in the, you know, 10 seconds you spent describing it. But I want to go back to that for just a couple seconds, because this is not trivial stuff. Now, there are obviously different individual degrees of severity and individual symptoms and manifestations, and some people have it worse than others. I mean, on the lighter end of the spectrum, you can just sort of randomly fall asleep during your waking hours in the day. You think about that. If you are at risk of instantly falling asleep at any point out of your control, you can't drive, you can't hold a job, in any meaningful job anyway, you can't, it's going to completely turn your life upside down, and if you're a child, the life of your parents and anyone else who may be caring for you for the rest of your life, to whatever degree you have to have that. But when you get to the more extreme ends where people have hallucinations, where, as you said, paralysis, this is a horrible disease, a horrible condition. And the idea that for something that on the whole is so benign as the flu, and it turned out, as we've said over and over again, that the swine flu, which was pushed as something that was terrible and horrible and awful and so much more severe than the seasonal flu, turned out to be far less severe than the seasonal flu, and yet the World Health Organization changed the definition of level 6 pandemic, the highest level for a pandemic, so that something is absurd as the, in the grand scheme of things. I mean, there, to my knowledge, there are documented instances of people dying from the swine flu. I don't mean to trivialize that one iota. Any avoidable or unnecessary harm or death is not anything to ever be made light of. So please don't mishear anything I'm saying as even remotely suggesting that. But in the grand scheme of things, the swine flu turned out to be far less virulent than the regular seasonal flu, and we've never called that a pandemic. Coming in to one degree or another seasonally every year. And yet when they gave it that level 6 designation, it triggered contract clauses around the world between countries and multinational pharmaceutical companies for the sale of $18 billion worth of swine flu vaccines, most of which were never even administered. So it's tragic, but we've been hearing about this narcolepsy issue almost continually since sometime during the pandemic and since, and we keep seeing this issue come back into the headlines. And there's another article here where that was documenting that the increase in narcolepsy of UK children was apparently documented for the first time in a recent study that supports findings that have already been made in Finland and Sweden. When I first saw the narcolepsy issue come up in association with swine flu vaccines, it seemed to be something that was being associated primarily with Scandinavian countries. But as I looked at more articles over time, I saw it in the UK, England, Ireland, and in Britain, but also in some Asian countries. I'm not clear at this point whether it was associated with just Glaxo's Pandemrix swine flu vaccine, because there were several manufacturers that made different swine flu vaccines, or whether it was broader than that. But not only does the whole pandemic, in retrospect, looking at all the available information we have now, look like something that was either deliberately exaggerated, if not even manufactured, and there is some evidence to suggest the manufactured part, but I'm going to gloss over that for right now because I don't have a medical background and I don't have the details in front of me. But in any event, parts of it clearly, if not the whole darn thing, appear to have been orchestrated. Several countries objected to redefining level 6 in a way that would include a mild disease like the swine flu, but the World Health Organization redefined it anyway. And even the British Medical Journal, a internationally recognized mainstream cornerstone in medical publishing industry. Even the British Medical Journal criticized the World Health Organization's mishandling of the swine flu pandemic. So it's not just something that outsiders were finding fault with. And then we see still, I mean, here we are 3 years later, still hearing more documentation of the association between the vaccine and these serious adverse events. And the issues now are on the order of, do we find and admit the truth or not, and do the governments compensate the kids? We don't ever hear any talk about, even hypothetically or on a philosophical level, about whether or not the vaccine manufacturers should be held accountable. I think it's pretty well established in a pure legal sense that they're not accountable, but should they be? What should be, you know, at least hypothetically, because I think they have the law all wrapped up in their favor, but should they be accountable, and what should the accountability be for an industry that treats people in the world this way? It's a rhetorical question, Rich, but if you have any comments, feel free.
Well, I mean, you're right, Alan. I mean, this has ruined people's lives, and, you know, I would even take that question a step back further into root causes and say, why don't we ever look at all this evidence and just ask the question, why don't we stop giving these influenza vaccines in the first place? You know, they're doing a ton of harm, and it's like the question, you know, they seem to put before us is, well, can we admit there's some harm and maybe give compensation, and yet there's this assumption that, oh, the good so greatly outweighs these, you know, supposedly rare adverse events. But it seems like to me, when I look at the evidence, I just come to the conclusion that, gee, we're doing a lot more harm than good with this, and we just need to stop doing it altogether.
It seems, in some regards, it seems so straightforward and simple, you know, in that sense, doesn't it? And yet, where do we find ourselves? And perhaps more importantly, where do we go from here?
Right.
But Rich, I've really put the burden on you today by continually asking you what other articles have you got there. But you're on a roll here and doing well. And with your permission, I'm going to ask you that question again.
Sure, I've actually got a few more, so I can talk until I'm out of articles, right?
All right. Well, if you happen to run out of articles, it seems unlikely. There's always so much more to talk about. But if you should happen to, in the unlikely event that occurs, feel free to let me know, because I've always got a stack of other vaccine rights issues we can talk about here. But please. And we're about, I don't know, five minutes away from a break. Actually, maybe about 3 minutes away from a break here now I think about it, because we need to leave a solid half hour for that show on the end. But what else have you got there, Rich?
Okay, and likewise, you know, if you need time to speak about something, you can we can just sort of, you know, stop with the articles. But let's go with a short one since we're coming up on break. This one from the Vaccine Liberation Army. And apparently this was just posted by an editor, so I don't have a name. But this is entitled, Flu Vaccines for Your Pet, More Insanity from Merck, Big Business Making Animals Sick. So I like that title, Alan, as you might imagine, but basically, Merck has come out with what's called Novavax, canine flu, H3N8 vaccine. And they're kind of posing dog flu now as an important illness that poses an emerging threat to all dogs. So this sounds familiar. it's only a matter of time until they kind of come after the animals in the same way that they come after the people.
Right.
But this vaccine contains a couple of dangerous preservatives, gentamicin and amphotericin, and again, I might not have the pronunciation exact on that, Alan, but they're both kind of known to be toxic and have potentially lethal side effects. Also, the adjuvant in this vaccine is aluminum-based, and kind of a weird sort of thing, this new dog flu. Kind of when this came out in 2004, they were claiming that that scientists believed that the virus had jumped species from horses to dogs. Okay, this is like an unknown kind of respiratory illness in dogs at the time, greyhounds to be specific, which are probably, you know, racing dogs who are caged and maybe, you know, not always sort of treated so well. But there had been a lot of questions about, well, how does a strain really jump from horses to dogs? And it does kind of, it is somewhat suspicious, and one is kind of left to speculate sometimes, Alan, that maybe some of these things don't exactly happen in nature by accident. But I do speculate. But I guess, you know, the concern is that, you know, is animal health going to follow the human health model now, where we have big business and pet hospitals and insurance and an increasing vaccine schedule and deadly, you know, pet foods and just chronically sick animals?
Well, Rich, of course, there is a parallel controversy with pets and in the animal world about vaccines, that just like humans, you know, the pets have to get rabies shots and other shots. And you know, Rich, I have been really concerned. I'm really glad you picked this article to end up on, because I've been really concerned about all the sneezing dogs, and I've just it's been a worry of mine for years now, and I'm just delighted that, you know, there's somebody coming out with a vaccine that can do that. You know, the dogs, you know, they can do some wonderful things if you train them right, but I've just never been able to figure out how to get one to carry around a handkerchief. And so I'm really glad you picked that article. And I mean, you know, it just goes back to, there's always another, I've been saying there's always another person to get a vaccine. Let's rephrase that. There's always another animal to get a vaccine.
Well,
you know,
it does set the stage, Alan, for states to start mandating, you know, a lot more vaccines for animals, which, you know, I personally would be against that and think that it probably would not support the health of the animals in the long run.
Yeah.
So it's just so bizarre, you know, to think that now we're supposed to be worried about flu shots for our dogs, too, so...
Well, Rich, I hope you'll stay on the line for a little bit here while we see whether or not we transition to a pre-recorded homeopathy segment or have a live segment at the end, and if it's live, whether Debbie's going to take that and run. But we're going to go to break here, folks. You're listening to Vaccines and Rights in the U.S. Please stick around. Debbie, if you did get in and are able to run your segment, just go ahead and run it whenever it needs to start, and otherwise, please come in on the line after I get through running some of the ads here.
We'll
be back with you shortly, folks. One way or the other, don't go away.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you...
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy. But it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available, committed to buying only from the growers when they can, and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself for someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, where we have a 24/7 chat room where you can come and share what's going on in the world with people of like mind. Anything and everything against the New World Order. Dial 347-324-3704 to catch our live show, beginning at 9 in the morning Pacific Standard Time, Monday through Friday till midnight, and 9 to 9 on Saturday and Sunday. Take us to the beach. Take us to the park. Take us on a walk with the dog. Only on Freedomizer Radio.
We are Critical Immunity with Larry and Renee
Our show will cover current events, national health news, nutrition, emergency preparedness, and organic farming, and various implements and tools to thrive and survive. We hope you tune in and join in our discussion of health, liberty, preparedness, and survival. Join our hosts, Larry and Renee, with guest callers always welcome.
C is for cookie, and that's good enough for me. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Saturdays. I love you, Miss Cookie. Join Cookie and
good
me
job.
On See the Power in You.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at FreedomizerRadio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
Hey, Freedomists, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together. Right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Well, folks, we are back live, Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. Debbie, are you with us?
I can hear you. So now, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, so this is really experimental to all those listeners on Freedomizer Radio and Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. The reason for that is what we have been starting is a simulcast that draws people from the Freedomizer and pulls them in from Homeopathy World Community. And we're going to kind of be trying to do play something that's on the Homeopathy World Community, HWC, and bring it in to Freedomizer Radio. So let me know if you hear the next sound.
Hi, this is Debbie Brooke, and I am recording this session for you today.
Something
and
playing?
We're going to continue our discussion about homeopathy and stress in our lives.
One more minute.
Homeopathy is a form of medicine that does not produce stress
now?
At this time.
We
have all kinds of things impacting
us. Working.
Whether it is food additives, insecticides, drugs that cause side effects.
Now, on with the regular talk and continue on about vaccinations and your rights and things that are going on. If that's okay with you, I do have a quote that I can tell you I think is very powerful, but I don't know why
Debbie,
an echo also.
It could be if the outcome, if you're doing this, connecting with us over the internet, the outcome from your speakers is going back into the microphone. It might be some feedback. But
okay, so I have to turn off the simulcast then, I think.
Our Mountain Pass portion of the show.
Reverberation.
Yes, it's not at all difficult to understand. I don't think it's interfering with the understanding.
Oh, you know, it might be. Okay, I think. Okay, how's that?
Nope, still got it.
Oh, boy, I've tried everything. All right, so here's my quote. It's Jared Polis, the Democrat representative from Boulder. He says, it's important to empower people. I hear that echo. With information, they need to make their own healthy choices. People have the right to make consumer decisions based on accurate transparency in labeling, and knowledge is power.
You know, Debbie, it really goes to such a fundamental issue of the whole vaccine controversy, but also to homeopathy, of course, has its own controversy with people either who don't understand how homeopathy works and therefore just assume it can't work, or people who have an interest in furthering allopathic care and not seeing the allopathic medical community lose any of its market share to homeopathy or any of the other so-called alternative and complementary healthcare arenas. And so those battles go on. But in any event, the ultimate solution really is, with that or the vaccine controversy, is not for us to replace anybody else's view with our own view, but ultimately to support people in their own self-empowerment, to help people see the need to get good information and complete information, to help people get good complete information, and to support people in making their own informed choices, and as it pertains to vaccines in particular, to support our state and federal legislatures in passing laws that allow us to make informed choices. And in today's world, those are some pretty tall orders, but as I am fond of saying lately, failure's not an option, so we go forward regardless of how easy or challenging achieving these goals may look at any given time.
So let me tell you what this quote comes from. The U.S. Rep. Jared Polis, D. from Boulder, has announced an introduction of a bill that would require food containing genetically modified organisms to be clearly identified. So that's really what it's about, being informed, having consumer choice, hearing the full disclosure and transparency. He says it's important to empower people with the information they need to make their own healthy choices. People have the right to make consumer decisions based on accurate transparency in labeling, and knowledge is power. And boy, I feel like we're in a huge chamber hall.
Rich, do you have any thoughts about that? And Debbie, I'm going to try a little experiment while Rich chimes
okay.
in. I'm just going to turn your mic off to see if that gets rid of the echo, and that'll let us know if it's something that's some kind of feedback happening on your end or something else.
Well, I couldn't agree more with the sentiment of that quote, Debbie. And I think it is about empowering people to be responsible, to take responsibility for looking at the information and making their own kind of informed decisions, and stop counting on the so-called experts, especially since the so-called experts are so often, you know, just riddled with conflicts of interest. And, you know, more and more we just kind of get to the bottom of seeing that the people who you know, saw medical procedures and, you know, I'm just about people having the freedom to choose what they want. And if somebody wants to choose to get a vaccine, well, you know, I'll support that choice too. But I just feel like everybody has to have the choice, especially when it comes to something as intimate as our own kind of personal health care.
Well, Rich, you know, I couldn't have said it better myself. And so really appreciate your comment there. And let's see, I'm not... do we have the echo still? I'm not hearing it, even though I turned Debbie's mic back on. So, well, Debbie, if you're still there, you're with us.
I'm still here, and when Rich spoke, it was pretty clear. So did you also mention the information about Guillain-Barré syndrome? That's also in the news.
Go ahead and tell us about that, Debbie. We haven't gotten to that today.
Okay, well, I want to just preface it by a British Medical Journal article that was published in 2011 that said Guillain-Barré syndrome and the adjuvanted pandemic influenza A, which was H1N1, the 2009 vaccine, and multinational case control study in Europe, they went through this control study in five European countries with 104 patients who had the syndrome and its variant, also called Miller-Fisher syndrome, and that was matched to one or more controls. The outcome that they say, the conclusion, that they're trying to see if there was a risk for this disease, because if you remember in 1977, there was a very big scare with the vaccine and people coming down with this disease. The conclusion was the risk of occurrence of Guillain-Barré syndrome is not increased after pandemic influenza vaccine, although the upper limit does not exclude a potential increase in risk up to 2.7-fold or 3 excess cases per 1 million vaccinated people. So basically they're saying it's a very small risk. When assessing the association between pandemic influenza vaccine and Guillain-Barré syndrome, it's hard to say if you're not French, it is important to account for the effects of influenza-like illness, upper respiratory tract infection, seasonal influenza vaccination, and calendar time. And that's a lengthy article. That was just their conclusion. They're basically saying there's no real risk or link. The question is, they now have put out another article. Let me see if I can tell you where that's at. experimentalvaccines.blogspot.com. A Miami man contracts Guillain-Barré syndrome, and that's 2013. So it brings back into question, really, if it is the flu shot, and that's what they're trying to figure out. So.
Well, you know, there's a couple of serious underlying questions in my mind as I'm listening to you talk about this, Debbie, because we need to have good objective scientific studies to tell us what is really the risk. Are we inventing, exaggerating, or completely missing, or otherwise, you know, misidentifying or over-identifying or what have you? I mean, these are all important issues. The underlying difficulty, the first one for me is a point that I've talked about a lot in the past, and you're just going to hear me talk about this again and again, but the questionable credibility of the medical publishing industry as a whole. And we've had people from right out of the industry itself go public and say the problems in the medical publishing industry are so severe as to make the conclusions in studies as a general proposition unreliable. No one's ever said that I know of that no study is good or accurate or appropriate or helpful or reliable, but they, at least a couple of editors, for example, that I've seen on the internet from the New England Journal of Medicine in particular that come to mind that have gone public saying we can't rely on the medical publishing industry anymore. We can't rely on the published results. Now, I think the vast majority of medical doctors are people of integrity trying to do the right thing, want to help people. But they're relying on information that at least some industry insiders are speaking out, saying we can't rely on it. Now, you can have the person of the greatest integrity in the world, but if they are relying on bad information, they can have the best of intentions but still give you bad information. And so this, to me, is an issue that does not get fixed by somebody passing a statute or regulation or somebody cracking a whip. This is, if it's to the point to where insiders are saying the system is unreliable, you have a serious systemic chronic problem. And while we absolutely need to take more steps to bring clarity on that and do whatever it takes to fix that problem, it's not the sort of thing that's likely to have a quick fix. Therefore, in the meantime, as a I think an ethical imperative, we have to have greater freedom of choice with healthcare. And of course, we talk about vaccines for the most part. If we can't trust the medical literature, then we don't know really what the truth of the question is. What is the risk of Guillain-Barré contracting or developing that from the swine flu vaccine or other flu vaccines? We know it's associated with flu vaccines generally. We also know from the CDC, FDA, and other people and organizations that have said 90 to 99% of the vaccine adverse events are never even reported. So there isn't really any data out there to tell us, you know, what the actual scope of vaccine injury and death is. And unless and until all of these issues are cleared up, and that's just not going to happen in the short-term future absent some major someone pushing the reset button on our current civilization. These are problems that I am hopeful can be resolved ultimately, but I think under current situation anyway, this is a long-term process. And in the
meantime,
I'm sorry.
No,
truth in diagnosis is also, I think, come into question, because a person can come down with a syndrome or a set of symptoms, and we don't maybe label it what it truly is or make the connection to the cause.
Do you think that's a skill or honesty issue or some combination of the two?
Probably a combination. I mean, many doctors probably wouldn't know to recognize what the, you know, they might just say, okay, this is just flu, or these are just paralysis symptoms, and they don't make the connection or are able to label it a particular disease. Or, as we know, they do change the definition of particular diseases and give them new labels.
And I've certainly heard instances where doctors, if they see symptoms of, let's say, pertussis, but it's in a vaccinated child, they'll give it another diagnosis because it's
not
a vaccinated
possible.
Child, so it can't be pertussis. And
right.
Pertussis is good for another example as well. I was just reading an article by Dr. Lawrence Pilevsky, and part of the article pointed out that there are all kinds of styles and degrees of the manifestation of pertussis. Some people get mild versions of it where it doesn't have the classic whoop, pertussis, the official name for whooping cough. Doesn't have that classic whoop. It's just a milder upper respiratory infection, and it'll be more like a cold or flu or whatever, and so never gets diagnosed as being pertussis. And so there's just all these different parts and pieces that factor into, whether it's skill or politics or honesty or whatever. It's really, really hard to get accurate figures on what's going on with the disease. And I have heard anecdotally many times, especially from the healthcare workers, and I don't want to beat a dead horse with this one, but I worked with about 150 healthcare workers in 26 states last fall. So I heard from people all over the country, and I heard many times that somebody, a nurse or other healthcare worker, calls me, and they or somebody they know got the flu shot and got Guillain-Barré syndrome afterwards. Now, you know, anecdotal evidence is not something you can, you know, draw any formal statistics from. But I tell you, if I'm hearing it in the fraction of healthcare workers that are contacting me, that certainly suggests that it's not the one in a million, three in a million figure, Debbie, that you were referring to just a few minutes ago.
I want to say something that we talked about in the chat here on Freedomizer Radio. Getting this information out to people and finding modes to do that, since the media is controlled by other forces, how are we going to so we were brainstorming there and decided that sending out postcards, something that you don't have to open up, or I even said dropping leaflets from planes on cities. I mean, some way to let people know. And I want to tell folks that there is a website called the Chalkboard Campaign. Is Rich or Alan, are you familiar with the Chalkboard Campaign?
I'm not. You, Rich?
I have not heard of that, no.
And it's really neat because it's something that could possibly be a video that goes viral. And it is called We Need to Talk About Vaccines. It's called the chalkboardcampaign.com, and I'll put that on the chat on Freedomizer for folks. Basically, it looks like a chalkboard with simple statements that anybody can read and understand and impress upon them the different things that people in the chat are talking about, the postcard campaign. Well, the chalkboard campaign would really, it's also a way that people can inform other people, like put it out on Twitter, link it on Twitter, put it on your Facebook page. There are millions of people out there who really do go to these places and could find it. And then maybe if it gets really a big hit, it could be put on mainstream media, although that I really doubt. So I gave that link. It's chalkboardcampaign.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Debbie.
Well, Alan and Debbie, I agree so much with what you're saying that we so desperately need funding and encouragement for independent scientific research. And we don't have much of that because the information is so tightly controlled by those who fund it, which is generally, you know, some combination of big pharma and government, which more and more can be one and the same. And it's also controlled by the media, as you're saying, Debbie. And you know, mm-hmm. one thing, I've told you this, Alan, in private, you know, I would love to see scientific studies, you know, by, you know, people who really have, you know, top-notch qualifications to do this, MDs, et cetera. Why not compare the vaccinated population to the unvaccinated population and just really look, you know, over the term of a lifetime at, you know, the medical health record? One of the simplest things to look at would be just use of antibiotics. You know, I don't have the data. I've not seen a study on this, but I would feel very confident that if we could just compare, like, antibiotic use over a lifetime between vaccinated and unvaccinated populations, that it would tend to prove that, you know, the vaccinated people were healthier. And, you know, my thing, I always go back in my personal philosophy about health and freedom to the Hippocratic Oath, you know, and I know this is basic and simple, but, you know, Hippocrates is supposedly the father of medicine, and his, you know, bottom line advice was first do no harm. And, you know, I think that the whole vaccination thing is so out of line with that philosophical point of view.
Well, you know, of course, the mainstream view would argue with that first do no harm by not allowing people to get the disease. But, you know, Rich, I got a real quick answer for you here because the Institute of Medicine recently concluded that a study comparing vaccinated with unvaccinated children isn't needed because the vaccine schedule is safe as it is. So we can dispense with that whole issue altogether there. You can stop worrying about it. And it's
no questions asked.
Exactly. And the irony is the report in which they said that, they acknowledged that the best quality evidence would come from just such a study. But there is a wonderful alternative medical doctor, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, who is working on trying to pull together the funding to actually do the formal study showing the comparison between vaccinated and unvaccinated populations. It's I'll tell you, it takes a crazy amount of money to pull things like that off. But you could probably Google that, Suzanne Humphreys, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, and find information out about that, and folks could certainly support that if they wanted to. We're coming down to, we're at about 9 minutes here. I just want to let folks mm-hmm. know that at the end of this show, the another show follows called Eccentric Gadsden Rising. And so, folks, Freedomizer Radio runs from West Coast time from 9 a.m. to, I think, midnight. And, Debbie, I don't know if you have the exact schedule or not. I believe it does that most days of the week. And they have an amazing assortment of different shows, and we are proud to be part of that and also proud to be continuing to simulcast not only to Freedomizer Radio but to Homeopathy World Community Radio. And, Debbie, I'm so glad you could be with us today. You were traveling.
Yeah.
I assume you wouldn't be able to be with us.
I'm traveling, and I was afraid the baby would be – there's quite a bit of background noise right now. So I think they must be doing drilling in the building. I also want to tell people that – did you mention Monday and Wednesday at 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific time, Crazy Dragon's Den – is another show, Crazy Canadian, where the main topics of discussion will be the Morgellon affliction and its effect in a variety of ways on its victims, and a lot of other HARP, mind control, microchipping, GMO, Monsanto, and more. On Sunday at 7:30 Pacific time, Liquid Butterfly, hosted by Ilana Skywing, is mysterious, cryptic, enchanting, and esoteric. It sounds so mysterious, I think somebody's got to tune into that. And then, you know, a special person in the vaccine industry is Barbara Lowe Fisher, co-founder of NVIC, and she has recently come out with new videos speaking to the public. And she says, if the state can tag, track down, and force citizens against their will to be injected with biologicals of known and unknown toxicity today, there will be no limit on which individual freedoms the state can take away in the name of the greater good tomorrow. And that was published January 23rd, 2013. And she's really got lots of great commentaries on the NVIC, National Vaccine Information Center, website.
Debbie, I would love, if you wouldn't mind, I would love for you to read that one more time. That just sounded really powerful and direct. And
Yeah. She's gotten so clear on her message, and, you know, she's solid in her the stats and the data behind what she says. She says, if the state can tag, track down, and force citizens against their will to be injected with biologicals of known and unknown toxicity today, there will be no limit on which individual freedoms the state, and that's a capital state, can take away in the name of the greater good tomorrow. And so Barbara Lowe Fisher is the president of the National Vaccine Information Center, a nonprofit charity she co-founded with parents of DPT vaccine-injured children in 1982.
That is just so powerful. Thank you for indulging me on that. It really, to me, it just really bared repeating.
Yes, and you can find many more of her videos there and her commentaries, plus action items, which is really why we're here. And I appreciate, Rich, that you are with us today and bringing us the information that you have.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Debbie, and thank you for tuning in and discussing this with us today.
Did you know that 60 lab studies now confirm the cancer link to a vaccine you probably had as a child?
What vaccine is that?
This is printed on the Liberty Beacon, published February 24, 2013, under the health category. It's the one that we've spoken about before. Dr. Morris Hilleman made astounding revelations in an interview that was cut from the Health Century. The admission that Merck Drug Company vaccines had been injecting dangerous viruses into people worldwide. And bear in mind that Dr. Hilleman was the developer of Merck's vaccine program. He developed over three dozen vaccines, more than any other scientist in history. And he was a member of the U.S. National Academy of Science, the Institute of Medicine, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and the American Philosophical Society. I do believe he's talking about the polio vaccine. Simian viruses might contaminate vaccines. And then we also have the HPV vaccine, Gardasil, which we have mentioned already on today's show. So the contaminated polio vaccine is responsible for human cancer cases. And that you can find on 2002, the Journal of Lancet published compelling evidence of this. And they're talking about 55,000 cases of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that were occurring each year. Each year, 55,000.
Wow, that is a huge number.
And so the question is, are people being speculative in this statement, or is this actually something that was repressed from the public view, or is this, you know, really actually true? Is it better to be safe or sorry? That's my view.
I think it's always great when you can kind of have a quick summary there of a longer point to sort of really bring it into focus. We are down about 2.5 minutes. And, Debbie, when we get to the 1 minute, I'm going to start our music exit, and I'm going to drop out so the other host, the next host, can call in or sign in, because you can only have one host in at a time here. I will try to call back in to see if I can call in as a guest for that last minute, but I'm going to ask if you would please, Debbie, you'll have 30 seconds of the first part of that last minute to give any closing comments. And again, Debbie, I'm delighted that you were able to make it in today, but tell folks in this minute before the last minute what they can usually expect in the last half hour from you in terms of homeopathy on this show.
Right. Well, we've done about 3 shows so far, and I've been talking about homeopathy, energy medicine, and stress reduction. And I've been giving information not only how you can reduce stress through meditation and other means, but also through homeopathic remedies and learning about an individual and finding out a remedy that could actually boost your vital force, your immune system, so you have a better coping mechanism and thus reduce stress. And that's what I've been doing, and I prepared an audio for today, but we'll play it another time.
Well, Rich, thanks so much for being with us today. Debbie, thanks for calling in. We've got about 5 seconds here, and I will start the music. It'll take a few seconds for it to come in. But, Debbie,
okay.
you now have 30 seconds before the singing kicks in for the last 30 seconds.
30 seconds before the clock. I feel like I'm on a game show. Well, I'll tell you what, folks. I want to thank Alan, PandemicResponseProject.com. That's where he's at. And go to his website, learn a lot more, all the news. And I'm going to talk over this music. It's pretty loud. Woo! Got to turn it down. And I'd also like to tell you to visit Honeyama. This is tricky. So I have a show on Monday called The Health In Show. Go to freedomgrowscommunity.com and there's a banner. We have experts on live video. You can also go to Homeopathy World Community and learn a lot about